Story time. The time during the week where we talk about what happened during our campaign. Our favorite moments, what we learned about ourselves, and what we learned about each other. Please join us now as we enjoy story time.
So we are back once again with another edition of Storytime. This time we are going back to the Voyage on the Unending Sea.
And we have Casey, who plays Dordain, with us today. Brother Casey, say hi.
Hey guys, glad to be back.
If you remember last time, we ran into a few little teeny tiny minuscule obstacles. We had one group that decided they had had enough. They were leaving. They were turning around. And they were taking as many people as they could with them. More than likely, they were going to use them as food, but they were taking as many people with them as possible. We also had our buddy hashtag Magic Mark playing Cedric, who had flown like 60,000 feet up into the air or something like that to see if we could see any land around us. And sure enough, he was up there and he saw something off in the distance. He saw what looked to be land. And so he comes back down, and he can see the whole time a different ship moving in the opposite direction. He comes back down and says, there's something off in the distance. We have to go that way. And so we full steamed ahead. Like, we knew that there was something off in the distance. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know if we were heading towards danger or if we were heading towards the nicest thing in the world. But we were heading in a direction of something, which was a nice change from the unending blue ocean that we had seen for 161 days up to this point with very few interruptions. And so we get up there, and lo and behold, it's an island. And we can see that there's like a fortress in the middle of it. We can see that there looks to be potentially life on this island. It's covered with trees, and it's covered with a bunch of vines, and we're just really excited at this point in time. Our whole crew is like, maybe this is it. Maybe we're getting close to land. Maybe we're finally finding something that we've been trying to hope for such a long time.
So, Casey, there is something different about this island. Can you describe what this island looked like and what it appeared like to your characters?
Yeah, it was a lot different than a normal island. Normal islands, you would expect like sand and dirt and stuff. But once you got on this island, it almost seemed like we were on the rising sun again with those vines. It was all viney and green, and we had no idea what we were on, whether this was a stable island. I mean, there was a fortress on it, so it had to have some stability, but it was just covered in these green vines.
Yeah, and do you remember what was in the center of the island that made you guys all debate on, like, do we get close? Like, do we try to circle around, although it was in the center, so you guys, there wasn't really any circling around?
Yeah, there was a giant fortress in the middle, and we suspected that obviously there had to be some sort of life that at least had been here before if there was a giant fortress in the middle of it.
Yeah, so this is a big, big moment. You guys have been out to sea for a long time. Like Chris said, just some sort of land was exciting, but then you guys all were like, who lives here? What's going on? Like, and you noticed the fortress had the vines crawling up it, so it looked like it had been uninhabited for a long time.
Yeah, and it was interesting. We had to decide at this moment who's going. Like, is the whole crew gonna get off the ship and go to the land and adventure with us to find out what was inside of this, you know, island and fortress? And we kind of decided,
because everybody wanted to get off the ship.
Oh yeah, they were just, I mean, they were ship crazy. They just needed something other than being rocked back and forth the whole time. And so we get off and we decide, like, all right, we're probably the strongest and the most well equipped to go and adventure into this forest and this jungle and head up to this fortress. And we start going and we realize it is just tough go. Like, it's thick vegetation. It is very, very thick. It's hard for us to wade through. And eventually we like get close enough to this fortress that we can see that it's, I mean, there's a portcullis for the door, there's windows and things like that, but we don't really see anything yet. We don't see any signs of life or intelligent life, at least to this point, except for we had Cedric with us and he made his flying snake automaton with him that he sent up into the air, but it never came back. And so in that moment, we were like, oh, well, that's one, not good. But another thing, on another note, that's a good thing because we found life. So, you know, they may have just thought, what the heck is this weird thing that we've never seen before? Shoot it down and burn it with fire.
Because it's an automaton, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, in this moment, Cedric had, it was an interesting moment for our group because you really see the dynamic of how people think in this group. We had in one group, we had Cedric who's like, well, I'm going to try and dig us under. So I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to have this
with
badger thing.
Automaton,
yep,
badger.
I'm going to dig down, see if we can find ourselves in. And then on the other side of that, somebody else thinking for themselves, we have Zillicent, who's like, well, I'm just going to climb up the side of this thing because it's got vines, and I'm going to see what's inside of this tower. And we found out how much thinking by yourself and how much not being a team really does harm you as a group. Some interesting things happened.
Yeah, and Zillicent, when he climbed up, we were just kind of like, okay, he's doing his thing, Cedric's doing his thing, whichever one works out, you know, we'll go with that plan, but... Sadly enough, Zillicent ran into some interesting people while he was peeking in the window. They found him, and he fell from the tower to the ground. And so we decided we have to run away from the tower. And then things got even more interesting from there. I forget what spell Mark decided to cast, but it was... We just kind of stopped, and he was like, I have this great plan. And he cast this big black box around us that we're just sitting probably like 60 feet maybe from the tower. And we're just this big black box in the forest. Like
that you guys can't see out of. They can't see
it's
into.
It's totally inconspicuous.
But it is not something. Yeah, it's totally conspicuous. Like it's not like you're in a forest and you've made this thing look like a tree. You can't, like, this thing just appears as a big, ominous, like, looking black box. And it's funny because it goes back to what Chris was saying, like, Mark didn't go, while you were running, go, Cedric has this plan, and I'm going to explain it to you while we're running. He's just like, stop! Wait, I've got a plan! And he casts this box around you. And I remember a couple of you guys, as players, were just like, this is your plan?
Well, because I don't think it was this moment of like, it was a spell that he's probably never used before, misheard like when he learned this spell, what it really does. And then he casts it and it's like, oh crap, that's not what I was hoping for. I was hoping for an invisible one that people couldn't see us. But instead I got a big old black box around us in the middle of the forest. And so we're just like sitting ducks now. It's like, okay, we can hear these things coming around us. We're trying to hide inside of us, but there's this noise of...
And you had waited for a long time. Basically, yeah. You guys all waited for them to react. So you just have kept hearing rustling outside and rustling and yelling in this weird language and rustling. So there, however many were in this tower, they had plenty time to get out.
Yeah, and we eventually were captured. Like, it was this moment where people are getting picked up. Like, we're trying to fight back, but it's not really working. And...
What are these creatures that eventually came through and attacked you guys?
They were these lizard folk that were on top of these mounts that were these big, like almost lobster crustacean things that had tentacles that would just incapacitate us. They would just paralyze us when those tentacles would touch us. And there's a lot of them. Like they're as far as, I mean, if we tried to run, we would not be able to make it very far. And so eventually we fight a little while, but we're captured. We're not killed. They didn't kill us, but they captured us and brought us inside of this tower. And we all come to and we're like chained together, like up against this wall. And we're like, what in the world is this place? We obviously know it's inhabited now, but apparently it's not a very friendly place. And some very interesting things happened to us while inside there that will potentially forever change the course of how our group acts and reacts to situations going forward.
So they brought you inside of this room and there's this strange looking creature with like a fish face sitting in basically what I described as, we would understand it as sort of like a hot tub kind of thing. And he's just staring out the window of this tallest tower and he brings you in and basically just tells you, thanks for bringing my ship to me. Thanks for bringing me more slaves. Where did you come from? What can you tell me about where you came from? How much treasure did you bring me? And this guy introduces himself as Sansibar, Sultan of the Island of Ilau.
Yeah, this guy was something difficult to deal with. I think for me at this point, I'm thinking there's got to be a way out of this. I just don't know what it is. And
You weren't the only one thinking that.
Right. I think the whole group was thinking that, but...
Because he was powerful. He had, like, I mean, he had these crazy things that he could do. Like, he flung people out of the window, and you just see them sail off into the distance. Like, he could snap these things on, and, like, he could snap these collars, which eventually we found out, like, we had tied one of these guys to a tree earlier in the night, because I was like, well, maybe we can save him. Maybe we can turn him. Maybe we can get this collar off of him. And... we find out that these collars are actually the things that are controlling them, because we noticed when people would backtalk to
these
this guy,
folk,
when people would backtalk to this guy, he would snap these collars on them, and then they would just do his every bidding. Like they would
become mindless.
Yeah, they
drones.
Would scrub his back, which was what Sanjin ended up having to do at one point in time, over and over and over. Or he would, you know, fling them out the window. He did that with Zillicent at one point in time. He also did that with Steven at one point in time, and so.
As soon as Stephen Krill opened his mouth.
Yep.
He was gone for the rest of the conversation, flying hundreds of feet away.
And it was just this really, like, it was this moment where we're all just like, we're going to die here. Like, there's no way that we can fight back against this guy who can do whatever he wants to us. Like, even Sanjin was able to be charmed by the necklace that was put on, and he's not able to be charmed by anything. So it was like, there's this really powerful stuff going on that this guy can do. And this is who we're having a conversation with.
It was interesting because this is not, and I share this with you guys afterwards, but this is not the way that I saw this night going. This was more supposed to be along the lines of a dungeon crawl kind of situation, although it would have been a tower crawl because it was more of a tower than anything else. However, the Chris, I think you explained it as the quote-unquote brilliant plan that the group had of everybody does their own thing, basically led to you guys have put yourself in a situation that all I can do is capture you, and the entire army has been alerted to your presence by now. You guys gave them so much time with that box, that brilliant box plan.
Well, I mean,
so it was interesting for me because I was like, well, there's some way out of this, but they don't have a lot of options at this
but
point.
I mean, at one point in time, I think we all started to click for us that we were realizing that we had given him ship names, but that was the only leverage we had, because he was getting really, really frustrated if we didn't give him all of the information that we had. And so we were thinking, well, if we give him this information, he'll just let us go because he'll be happy. But that wasn't the case. He was like, I'm going to get all the information from you and then just finish making you my slaves. And so we realized...
because he basically had a magic that if he knew the name of a ship, he could then find that ship, and he wanted more gold, more ships. And so you guys had told him about the ship that the Rising Sun that had sunk with lots of treasure on it, and you guys had told him about the Noggle's demise. But at that point you realized, oh, he has the power to find where these ships are. All we have left is the name of the Sea Chariot, and he wants this ship. This is the only bargaining chip we have. So you guys are going back and forth, and he basically says, all right, you guys are annoying. I just want to know the name of the ship. Like, what can I do to make you guys give me what I want, this name of the ship, so I can get the final piece of the pie, the treasure that's on the ship? Because you guys had made up this story once you realized this was a bargaining chip, that there was this really powerful gem on this ship, the Sea Chariot, which there wasn't, that could power water from the plane of the element of water. And so you guys had made up this whole story, but you weren't giving him the name of the ship because you're like, we need to make a bargain with this guy. We got to get out of here. We don't want to become his slaves. So how did that go, Casey?
For a while, it didn't go very well. Like, at first, we were like, we want the whole crew, we want our ship, we want to just leave. And he wasn't having any of that. He's like, well, I'm not just going to let you leave with everything you came with. You're going to have to give me something. So after a few minutes of debate between the captain and me, and pretty much everyone chimed in into the deal, but eventually it came down to we got half of the crew, I think, and that and the other half was to be his slaves pretty much, and then we were to get on the ship and leave, and that was going to be the end of it. I shook his hand, and we thought that was going to be the end of this island, and we were just going
to
go.
And I also forgot to say this earlier, but there was this interesting moment for Captain Garzak where he's a Viraco. He looks like a warthog, and this guy, this, you know, sultan, thought it would be fun with his powerful magic to turn him into a pig. And
so he kept his face, his head.
But he had a little teeny tiny pig body. And eventually, like, his limbs started missing, and he was just a torso with a warthog head and a little pig body. And I told you at some point in time, I was like, Mitch, I'm not sure how we didn't think of this at the time, but you should have totally wrapped him in a blanket, and he would have been a pig in a blanket. That would have been perfect.
It was pretty funny. Yep, I did not think of that. But yeah, you eventually, Captain Garzek would not make any sort of deal, so he got transformed and made to shut up. Songjin tried to make a deal, but he was not happy with it, so he slapped the collar on him, and Songjin went to scrubbing the back of this creature. And then eventually it was only you and Zillicent, who Zillicent was changed into a beautiful blue-skinned woman because he found the appearance of Zillicent's rocky body to be disgusting and he wouldn't even want to look at it. But eventually it was you and Zillicent who didn't have these collars on, who weren't mindless drones. And yeah, you had his hand outreached and you had back and forth tried to negotiate for quite a while, and it was like, okay, I will give you half the crew, I will let you leave with your ship, just tell me the name of this final ship. And so you had this hand out in front of you, Casey, and it was like, do I shake it or do I push harder? And you were at the point where you're like, I don't think if I push any harder that this is going to be good for us.
Yeah, at that point I kind of had the feeling, I was like, he's not going to budge any more than he already has. Like, his eyes are, like, popping out of his head. They're his bloodshot eyes. He just wants to know. And so I was like, I just have to agree to this, and we have to give him the name of the ship. Otherwise, none of us are going to leave this island, and it's just going to be the end of the campaign. So that would have been the end.
And so you shook hands on it, and he told you guys, be gone, get on your ship, and leave. And you guys told him the name of the Sea Chariot. And so now he can find all those ships. And you guys are right about heading out the door, like, we better get the heck out of here. We are not happy with this deal, but let's leave while we still can. And hashtag Magic Mark with Cedric decides that he's got one final trick up his sleeve.
And he said, well, at least he doesn't know about the armor. And at that moment, I think he disappeared, right? Like, the guy...
Yes, he just completely disappeared.
The Sultan made him completely disappear. And then was like, what armor? What are you talking about? And we didn't, like, I think we ended up getting out of him that way. Like, Cedric was floating in the elemental plane of water for all of eternity. Like, that was his punishment for mouthing off to him. And I was like, at this moment, it was like, all right, Cedric has done something stupid, but, you know, you took me aside at this point in time after what I'm about to say. I was like, I walk up to him and I say, bring my friend back. That's not the way that he's going to end. I will take his place in the elemental plane of water. Songjin did this. And you took me aside because you were like, what are you trying to tell me right now? Like, what are you trying to do with Songjin? Because Songjin had been creating this whole philosophy this whole time that all life is important. Like, it doesn't, like, he's never killed anybody yet in this campaign. He's only ever knocked them out. He's always tried to better the people that are around him, no matter how vile they are. The Noggles, for example. And he didn't believe that this was the way that Cedric was supposed to go out. And so Songjin in this moment was like, this is my moment to forever solidify in these people's minds that life is precious. And so he goes up to the Sultan and says, I will take his place. The armor is on our ship. Give me my friend back. I didn't say where it was from, but I said, I'll tell you where the treasure is if you spare my friend's life. And so he did. He agreed to it. And in this moment,
he was just so tired of you guys at this point. He wanted to just get rid of you guys. You had this moment of crazy sacrifice. And like, I pulled you aside because this was not something that Chris, your character, deserved to die for.
No.
This was something that Magic Mark knew he was pushing buttons where buttons shouldn't be pushed. I don't know what he was thinking was going to happen, but unfortunately, his character had reached the point where it's like, all right, well, your character, I don't know what to do, except your character has just pushed buttons where it's been very clear you shouldn't push buttons anymore. So you made this sacrifice with your character, and I wanted to make sure, because as soon as you did that, I knew where I was going to take that in the story. And I was like, well, I want to make sure that Chris doesn't feel robbed. Like, maybe he wants his character, knowing what he's been building with his character, to die, to be sacrificed. And it's funny because I've never pulled somebody aside before and been like, do you want your character to die here? Yeah. Like, and wondering if that's what you wanted. Like, I wasn't sure, because I know that you've talked about, like, you want Sanjin to have an end that's worthy of his story kind of thing. And so I didn't want to, I had a plan, not so much a plan, but I knew where the story in my mind would go from there. But I didn't want to rob you of a death that you wanted. And so you were like, play it out the way you foresee it. But if my character dies because of this, you were like, I'm okay with it, because this is how my character would react. I would absolutely sacrifice myself for another person.
And that's the way that we played it the whole time. Like, I closed my book. I was like, that's it. Like,
you thought you were dead. I think everybody thought you were dead.
Like, I 100% thought I was dead.
I thought he was dead.
But yeah, everybody did. And so everybody left. Like, everybody left, leaving there. Like, it's just like, what in the world just happened?
The doors were shut. You guys were allowed to leave with half the crew. Yeah. And you met down. You're getting on ships. Sanjin is off in the elemental plane of water with typhoons and being smacked in the face by crazy waves. And he's decided he's going to die because he can't swim forever in this crazy, massive sea of swirling waves and everything. And Stephen Creel, who had been shot away in the air by this creature, is now back with the rest of the crew waiting to board the ship. And you guys get back there, and this is the moment that it was just this crazy moment, because Zillicent doesn't care about Steven or pretty much anybody else, so he's not telling him. Captain Garzek is still looking like a pig, so he's kind of got other things on his mind. And then Cedric is also just getting on the ship and doesn't care that much about Steven. You, Casey, as Dordain, you see Stephen Creel, and he's walking around. He's going, where's Sanjin? Where's Sanjin? Where's Sanjin? And he comes up to you and he asks where Sanjin is. And what do you do?
Yeah, it was one of those moments where I felt like I had to do something because no one else was going to. And I know that Sanjin would want Stephen to know, even though maybe Sanjin really didn't like him a little bit, but I pulled Steven aside, and I pretty much told him, Sanjin's not coming back. He sacrificed himself for the crew. And Steven just looks at me, and he's just starts crying. And at this point, I think he just, like, fell to the ground weeping, and I just got on the ground and just hugged him. Like, I felt really bad as a player. I was like, this guy is just torn apart. He gave a life debt to Sanjin, and all I can do for him is just say, hey, he gave himself for the crew. Sanjin would want you to get on the ship and live out the rest of your life. And from there, Steven stood up. I was like, okay, I think I got him to realize what Sanjin did. He's going to get on the ship. Not the case. He stands up, looks at me, and he takes off booking it into the forest. And at this point, I'm like, I know exactly what he's going to do. I have to start running after him. And the part that sucked was he could run faster than I could, so I wasn't able to catch up to him.
And you had pulled him aside, too, so nobody saw you both book it back into the woods.
Right, so at this point, everyone's getting on the ship. I'm running after Steven, and eventually I get to the tower where I'm assuming he was going to go. And all of a sudden, I'm at the front gate, and out of nowhere, pops Sanjin. I was like, Sanjin, where did you come from? Where's Steve? Have you seen Steven? And I'm dripping wet.
I was like, I have no idea. Like, why am I here? Like, I didn't understand why I was back, because I didn't know Sanjin went running after.
this creature. You appeared in front of him. You popped out of the elemental plane of water. You're dripping wet in front of this sultan. And he just says, I do not understand you mortals and your strange ways. He whips his arm out. You go flying out of the room. And as the doors are closing by themselves, you see him reach out to two wheels on each side of his chamber, and they start turning. And this chain that was going down from the tower to one of the ends of the island starts being pulled upwards. And back on the ship, what they saw was this tail rise from one of the ends of the islands, and it's the tail of it's the tail of a giant whale, and the chains were going down into the mouth, basically creating a bit in the mouth of this giant whale, and this whale starts to dive, and the entire island along with it. And you, Dordain, and Songen are inside of this tower, and you feel an earthquake. You're not sure what's going on. You didn't see the island as it was, but you feel an
earthquake. And we have to book it back to the ship.
And Songen's not moving.
Yeah. I'm not moving at this point because I'm like, I need to go back inside. Like, I can't. I think it was this moment where Songen was like, I did my duty. Like, I believed 100% in what I did. Like, I believed my own philosophy so much that I was willing to die for it. But I don't think he was ready for anybody else to believe that. And I'm not sure exactly how this is going to affect him, but I think he was a little bit upset that he had invoked this philosophy so much on Steven, that Steven was watching him so much the whole time that he ended up believing it more so than what Songen did. Songen was okay with taking the place for somebody. He was not okay with somebody taking his place in death. That's the hard part for him to comprehend right now. And so he doesn't fully believe his own philosophy yet, which is really interesting to think about.
Yeah. Well, I remember ending, and this was one of those, I love nights where it ends and a player stays and talks the whole time, like for an hour or two afterwards. And that's what you did. You stayed and you talked with me, and we just talked about what had gone on. And I remember you saying, like, you didn't realize until we really talked about it at the end what had taken place. Because all you really knew was, You thought your character was dead. You thought Songen was dead, that he was going to drown. Everybody else thought he was dead. And then you remember being spit out into this room with this creature who was a Marid, which is a water elemental djinn. And he throws you outside of the room. So somehow you're back. The door shut and you just are picked up by Dordain. And I was like, Steven Creel got there. And he did exactly what you did for Cedric. And replace, and you were like, that's what happened? And then, yeah, it was that moment of, now Dordain's trying to pick you up and carry you out because he's like, the island is shaking, we have to move, but you're just, I don't think Songen knows what to think in this moment, but in a way, it is exactly what you've been trying to do. You've been trying to make everybody see the beauty of life, like any kind of life, and nobody's really listened to you up until this point. And the only person that has made any sort of way in listening to you has been this character that really everybody kind of shuns because he is annoying and he's kind of an outcast. And I think you as a player and you as a character have been like, I'm going to make an ultimate sacrifice. I think that's probably the way that my character is going. But now you're thrown into, well, I was just, a sacrifice was made for me because of the things that I teach and I preach, but that's not what I was expecting to happen. And what I thought was going to happen with Steven Creel. And now we have this tragic tale that really, in my opinion, has a beautiful ending to it, although it is a tragedy of Steven Creel. And it absolutely, I think more than anybody, Dordain and Songen have got to be affected by these final moments of his life. And what, I mean, Dordain had him, he was embracing him 30 minutes before and just saw him book into the woods. Nobody even saw him make this switch, but you guys knew what had happened.
Well, then there was this moment that we were joking about, like, oh, we have these engines that, you know, spew water from the elemental water plane. Maybe he'll just shoot out through one of the engines and he'll be back, you know? Maybe that's the reality of what will happen and he won't actually be gone. But yeah, it was an intense night. It was I don't really know what else to say other than that. It was a good and intense night.
And that was the thing. Yeah, I know that you, Chris, after when you stayed and we talked for a while, you were just very, you felt very strongly. You were like, I really hope that every one of our players comes back when we play again and has really thought about the events of the night and how does that mm-hmm. affect their characters and what, how their characters develop from that, good or bad, because nobody should walk away from the situation that happened with Stephen Creel and with losing the entire half of the crew.
Yeah.
And just remain the same. Like it was a, and with the plan just going so awry, like mm-hmm. how does that
yeah.
affect you guys in future plans and such? But yeah, I'm really interested to see, especially Dordain and Songjin and their thought process. And I mean, we left off with you guys in a tower that was going underwater. So it'll be interesting to pick it up from there next time and see if you guys even survive.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, he might still just die, you know? That would not be fun. That would be the worst way for Songjin to die.
Well, we will have to see. But somehow Songjin was able to write down his journal entry thoughts about this night, this event. So let's head there right now and listen to another entry from Songjin's journal.
Day 161 of the voyage on the unending sea. Dying was peaceful. The waves of the elemental plane of water rocked me to sleep in my grave. I had done it. I had completed my life. I had gone out in a way that I was proud of and in a way that I knew would forever change the lives of those around me. And as I rocked, as I lay in peace awaiting death, something happened. It was not death, but life. Air filled my lungs again, even though the remains of death dripped from my clothing. And as I stood before the Sultan, he told me that he didn't understand the acts that us mortals had committed. And with that, I was flung from his presence. Confusion clouded my brain. I didn't know what to make of what was happening. But I was met by Dordain, and he informed me that Stephen had taken my place. How could he do that? How could he ruin the chances of the crew finally seeing that all life mattered through my selfless act of kindness? I had done this for them, for him. I had done it to prevent them from falling deeper down the hole that led to the deaths of their souls. I did it for me. This was not for them at all. I had done it for me to prove a point. Stephen did it because he believed, and now he is gone. My selfish act cost him his life. This philosophy that I prescribed to, that I thought I had fully believed in, he did. And now he is no longer here. I must learn. We all must learn. We all must remember what Stephen did. Stephen, may the waves of death be gracious to you as they were to me.
Thanks for listening to this week's Storytime. We hope you've enjoyed these moments from our campaigns, stories about our characters and what they have done within our world. We hope that you have enjoyed your time here, and we hope that you come back again next week for another edition of Storytime.